Next Curve.
Welcome, this is Leonard Lee, Managing Director of Next Curve, your host for today's webinar. Thank you for joining today's Rethink event. And in this session, we will be discussing the past, present, and future of IoT with a very special guest, Rob Tiffany, CPO of Hitachi Lumada. Let's move on to our next discussion topic here, which is how will IoT change the world? One of the things that I think we will all agree on is that the IoT presents a tremendous field of opportunities for enterprises. Given what we've talked about with digital twins, artificial intelligence, the more ubiquitous computing that are going to be part of our future, they can anticipate, to the point that you made earlier, Rob, the opportunity to create new business models, right? And so you gave an example of how that's happened in the industrial space. And now we can look at how that dynamic can be played out in the consumer space. And I think some people will argue that good examples of these new business models that are quote unquote IoT enabled are examples such as Uber, right? What they've done with car sharing. You know, we were talking about gamification a while back, maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, it was like a big buzzword, but with IoT, the real world can be gamified. It can be interacted with in ways that we weren't able to do in the past, especially for consumers. It's probably important because when you look at how IoT is being applied in the industrial space, a lot of that's not going to be familiar to the consumer. And to your point earlier, Rob, you need to dumb things down a little bit. Well, maybe that's not a good choice of words. You have to simplify things, make things familiar and, you know, quite frankly, fun. For these commercial, these consumer applications. And I think one of the things that the digital twin does, and you've made this point, is that it makes things familiar. It goes beyond bits and bytes. You actually, let's say, have a CAD representation or graphical representation of a asset avatar, as you mentioned, that you can manipulate in a virtual space or a digital space or a digital context. Right.
Right.
And then from there, you have all kinds of possibilities, all kinds of different ways that you can interact with that avatar in porting different types of functions or applications. With AI, you go beyond just doing the predictive. You can also measure how well you're predicting things and have this closed loop optimization. It's something that I had actually spoken to and discussed with IBM Research a while back. When I was doing some work for the oil and gas industry, talking about how you can apply AI enabling closed loop optimization. So that's another possibility that we can anticipate in the future as people start to demystify and a more clear understanding of what AI can do. And then, of course, finally, the context-driven automation. So what's your reaction?
Where I live, I have a lot of friends who are in the gaming industry. So there's a lot of gaming companies around over here.
Right.
When you're playing any game on PlayStation or Xbox or Nintendo or whatever, forever, all those characters in those games, they were a digital twin, an avatar that had property. Right. And how they interacted with the game and other characters in the game and their personality. Talk about some folks who've been at the real forefront of doing the digital twin thing on steroids. You know, with sprites and how it, all kinds of things. In fact, I've often told people just in software in general, the best developers are the game developers because I guarantee you, you'll never have to build a business system that will be nearly as complex as some massive multiplayer video game. It's familiar. It's understandable. So you're right. When you make digital twins out of things in your home and in the factory, in your car and subsystems, all of a sudden, it makes it more familiar. Oh, I know that. I used to play this character when I'm doing Legend of Zelda. Oh, I can interact with this thing via video game looking console or something. I totally get this. Because that's certainly half the battle. So much of IoT and M2M has been, hey, here's a bunch of raw data from this thing.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, let's take your IoT technology and take that raw data and turn it into that avatar and then present it to humans. And also, when you take it and put it in that nice format that's easy for humans to understand, it also makes it easier for business processes and analytics and other things to understand as well.
Right. Visualization, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Apps and, you know, I mean, one of the things that I saw at the IoT Solutions World Congress was a vendor that was using AR glasses to overlay a digital twin on top of a water pump, where the software would do would highlight the defective part, right?
Yeah.
And that's just an example of how you can take metrics that indicated a fault and then visually represent it out in the field so that a technician can actually make an informed assessment, a visual assessment of the physical, and then also get instructions on what to do in order to repair the faulty device, right? Or the faulty equipment.
Yeah.
It's like a video game.
It is.
All that case or that scenario played out is like a video game,
and that technician should get points.
Yeah, exactly.
For fixing machines, right?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's gamification, you know, and they're on a team maybe with all their other fellow technicians working in this plant or working on whatever their job is. Like I always say, we need to be willing to take baby steps on all this stuff. So if you can't figure out the AR, VR glasses just yet, you can still put that onto a tablet or a smartphone that technician can carry. Also, you know, again, where people get freaked out, and you brought up a good example and you probably didn't know it. Digital twins can be very elaborate. They can be a 3D CAD model. I've worked with companies that their whole business is making digital twins, and I've seen the year before last at Hanover Messe, met with some folks who were in that space, and they showed me the most amazing digital 3D model of a container ship in every single room and every deck and everything in that ship. And it was just mind-boggling how amazing it was.
Yeah.
But if you tell a customer, this is just like the AI ML thing with IoT. If you tell the customer the only way you can do a digital twin is this elaborate thing, they might freak out. And so I'm a big fan of lots of things being optional. I want you to be able to get up and running and get value with the most minimal thing that you can build today.
Yeah.
If you feel the need to build the cool 3D CAD thing, that's awesome. And for some scenarios, it might be required. But I'm absolutely a fan of, hey, build the basic digital twin that you can get up and running and get out the door. And then everything else is optional. You can add to it and you can build the 3D thing later. I've seen other companies that required you to build this extreme digital twin, and it was cool demo, but it really put off a lot of customers.
I think that's a critical point that you're making right there. In fact, I think it's the most important point.
I always like to just remember that all these businesses and people you talk to, they're in their business. They're in the oil business. They're in a gas pipeline business. They're in their whatever business. They do not sit on the hamster wheel of technology like we do.
No.
And like they need to be racing towards the future all the time. They could care less.
That's wonderful. Dean, your thoughts?
I think both gamification and the digital twin are going to be big items with respect to the IoT. You know, I like the idea of incentivizing people as they get things correct when they're repairing things. That'll make sure it gets repaired properly. At the end of the game, you know, I have to get so many gold coins as it goes on. But I think all these tie in together quite tightly is, you know, you take a look at the closed loop optimization. That's okay. Is my digital twin working right? And then is my IoT item working right and comparing to the digital? You know, the context driven automation goes back into what we were talking about with respect to the VR, AR. And then I think the biggest challenge for the industry, and we touched on this earlier with respect to the Hitachi bullet trains, what is the business model? How does my business model change? And I'm going to be willing to move into that direction. Because as you take a look at that, now Hitachi almost becomes a bank because, you know, they own all the trains. They didn't own the trains before. The ownership has switched. And so how do our financial institutions adjust to that? Because they're used to this CapEx OpEx model that is going to get completely turned on its head in many instances. And they have to be educated in how to manage that and go forward with that.
That's a good point. you're right. That's a new world for a lot of folks.
Yeah. I've listed a couple of challenges, or at least four of the challenges. I know, Rob, you're keen on security. Talked about the readiness and maturity, but I think the word of caution there is value that can be found without making things too complicated or getting yourself into a problem related to the digital divide, which is the skills and experience. I think there's still a pretty huge gap, right, in terms of knowledge. You know, a lot of the IoT resources of the folks who know IoT and the solution patterns are going to be folks from industrial. It's probably a lot less in the consumer space than what you have in the industrial space. You work in that space quite intimately, but would you agree that there's a pretty big divide and a shortage of skilled and experienced resources?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, generically speaking, there's a huge digital divide with skills just in a really plain sense. But yes, with IoT, sure, all that stuff, absolutely. And right now, you IoT world, when you think of the technology and the offerings, it's completely dominated by technology companies, IT companies, mm-hmm, that for the most part have absolutely no experience, real world experience, but they saw the opportunity and they're diving in, right? And so, yeah, you know, but it's not like they've actually ever done any of this stuff before, but they're like, hey, IoT platform, that kind of looks like middleware I built before. I can do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think your success in IoT, if you're an IoT business or whatever, with the readiness maturity of your customers, assume almost no readiness and no maturity. Build your solutions, build your offering and your services, and assume nothing of the customer. Make sure that you can make Forrest Gump successful. The digital divide, the same thing. You need to overcompensate in your technology. You need to assume no one has any of those skills or experience, and you need to make it simple for folks. And the technology complexity is a killer. And people are using all kinds of advanced esoteric technologies to build IoT stuff. There's so many blockers to IoT success right now. And you certainly see that the complexity and the lack of skills around all this kind of blends together. That's got to go away really fast. And I think it can. Right. And then security and privacy might be the biggest blocker to IoT success right now. People are.
Yeah, by the way, I didn't know Forrest Gump needed help being successful. I thought he just ended up being successful anyway.
He gets
circumstance.
He fumbles and stumbles his way, and maybe he gets a little help from Lieutenant Dan sometimes. Exactly.
Oh man.
Oh.
That's great.
One of the things that I was like and recommended to our clients is that, you know, you need to begin with the end in mind, and you need to make sure you've got the stakeholder on board with this. Mm-hmm. Rob just talked about assume nothing. Well, I think you have to go out and actually talk to an end user and say, okay, what keeps you awake at night? What are your issues? What are your problems? What's the problems that you're trying to solve? I go back to one of my early instances in the IoT where I was sitting at a conference listening to IoT soft, a guy that was running a paper mill plant. He says, oh yeah, we got all this data from the sensors and stuff, and it feeds into the data lake. And then I take an Excel spreadsheet and figure out what's going on. And I just kind of went, you've got to be kidding me. And that was leading edge technology for them at the time. You know, they were trying to figure out how to automate getting the data better into the Excel spreadsheet that they then could get more of a automated output. Hopefully they've matured a little bit in that. But he said, yeah, somebody came and talks about IoT solution, but you know, they were just talking about data and trying to create analytics and all this stuff, and they really didn't understand our output. So you really have to understand what the stakeholder wants and needs, and then go ahead and try to implement that IoT solution and platform.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think, you
know, I'm glad you brought up Excel.
Yeah.
It's almost Excel. I don't like, you know, Excel's like sometimes a whipping boy, kind of like people still doing things on paper. There is a realization that everyone needs to come to, that most companies still run their business, their entire company, on Excel today. In spite of all the advanced back-end systems and technologies they bought from all the big companies over the years. The biggest companies in the world, I talk to them all the time, and guess what? They run their whole business on Excel. And so I have to get over it. I often tell, you know, like when I was at Microsoft or I talk to anybody up here or in the Valley, you need to get in your car and drive out of the West Coast and you need to go to, you need to go to Oklahoma City. You need to go to St. Louis, Missouri. Yeah. You need to go to Omaha, yeah. Nebraska. And you need to get real with regular, real people that they do paper, they do Excel, and they don't live in our little West Coast echo chamber. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you got to be careful. You got to be careful, Rob, because you know Iowa State's becoming an IoT hotbed. So
there you go. I'm all in.
But I think the other thing that really, really hits home with me is, you know, this whole digital divide and technology complexity. We're raising a generation of kids that know how to game, but they're not willing to go into the STEM and understand the engineering and science behind it. So you're going to have a few geeks out there and a lot of business guys trying to drive what's going on. So we're going to have to figure out how can we know that digital divide and how can we get some of those business folks more educated on what needs to take place in order to make the business proposal they have into reality. And I think that's going to be a challenge. We're starting to experience it, but I think in 5 to 10 years, it's going to be a much greater challenge for the industry as folks go forward. And I think that comes back to Rob's statement earlier about, can I make these platforms more generic where, you know, I don't have to have a PhD in computer science or be an expert programmer in order to make this happen, that I can go ahead and take bits and pieces of it, you know, kind of like WordPress for a website. Right. You can take the bits and pieces, put it together, and with a minimal amount of compute experience, I can create a website for myself that doesn't look like my third grader did it. We're going to need to get to that point eventually, or we're going to have to get back in and say, all right, as you go through your curriculum, you need this science and technology, and you're not graduating until you get it.
I'm so glad you said WordPress, man. I tell people all the time that you need to build the WordPress of IoT. It's got to be that
simple. Awesome.
You guys are cut from the same cloth, I can tell.
I think so.
All right.
Okay, Rob, yes. What are the takeaways that you would like our audience to walk away with from our discussion today?
You know what? There's a lot of components in IoT technologies. There's the thing, the asset. It may be dumb. It might be smart. It might have a microcontroller. You may have an edge thing that looks like a gateway that's nearby. You may have a server-ish looking core part of your platform that could be in the cloud or it could be in a data center or could be on the factory floor. You've got analytics technologies and tools, and you've got your outcome, maybe web visualization or your AR, VR and all that kind of stuff. You've got all these components that make up an IoT solution, and every one of those pieces really needs to be locked down in a big way. You need to be able to uniquely identify all of your assets and either, you know, use renewable rotated security tokens, or you can do X509 certificates. I know that's a little harder to deploy, but things like that. Everything needs to be encrypted at rest. Everything needs to be encrypted in transit. You've got to have role-based access control and security. You know, GDPR is creeping up on us, isn't it? It's going to light a fire under a whole lot of IoT platform vendors, actually. Make sure your things are doing just outbound-only connections. Don't have things listening for a command and control. You need to do outbound only. That's why we have full duplex wire protocols. You don't want to increase your attack surface. Firewalls. I mean, I could go on and on. Trusted external environments on all these platforms, you know, whitelisting things. It's a big thing. Security is the most serious thing. Mirai was a huge attack, and it was simple. You know, it was just based on common passwords on different things. Be paranoid about it. You know, be like Andy Grove, only the paranoid survive. Be paranoid about security.
Great. Okay. So the next one is related to open standards.
Yes. So, you know, people love to talk about using open standards, but there are lots of technologies out there that are open, but it doesn't mean that everybody knows how to use them. This kind of goes back to getting things simpler, where you don't have to be a PhD to use these technologies. Lots of people try to sound really smart, and they can list 100 different strange industrial IoT wire protocols. You know, they can talk to you about MQTT and AMQP and BACnet and CAN bus and a million other things. And all that stuff confuses people. I think if you're talking about industrial stuff, you'll use edge gateways that may have to work with a lot of these weird, strange protocols and data formats. Because the only way to succeed in a big way in IoT, at least today, is you got to work with old stuff. All these pure play platform players that were designed for Raspberry Pis and Arduinos, you know, got a rude awakening coming. It's really got to be simple. There's lots of great technologies that everybody understands that are widely used. Lots of them are just web standards. You know, I know those guys at the W3C who've done the talked about the web of things as an approach, because, you know, you've got standards bodies that say, we need to create yet another standard for IoT. I think we may have enough standards already. I think aside from having a small edge or whatever edge gateway device near old machines to talk to strange stuff, but I'm a big believer in keeping it simple the rest of the way. And so if you can just use HTTP and REST to send stuff up the chain, you should do it. If you can use web sockets to send commands, you should think about doing it. I know MQTTs, wow, there will always be technologies that are better, that are out, but they're not pervasive. I think that HTTP2 is going to put all these other things out of their misery, because it's going to be pervasively used all over the planet. And HTTP2 does the compression, it has binary, and it does server push. And all of a sudden, you have the characteristics that you might use MQTT or AMQP for in something that everybody can understand. So a big fan of keeping everything simple. You know, if you can build all your IoT technologies in JavaScript that anybody can develop with, I think that's a great thing. As I see more and more of this ML technology get to work with things other than R, it's great that so much machine learning is done with Python. We teach Python to kids because it's like one of the easiest programming languages. I think that's a great combo. Yeah. I think it's great when you can start using TensorFlow from JavaScript or .NET. So anyway, widely adopted and keeping things simple, it's all good.
Great insight. Thank you. And so number three, your favorite.
Yes, I probably don't have anything else to say about that. It's a character
in the game. We killed this one, right? We beat this one to death.
We did. Give me 2 seconds. The things we're doing with Lumada is to really go to the next level of making these things understandable digitally, is really making complex things with complex subsystems. You know, so many IoT platforms, they'll like, here is the JSON representation of your car. And it's kind of this flat JSON document thing. When the reality is your car is complex, but it has complex subsystems like the engine itself and the transmission. Those should be avatars unto themselves. So complex subsystems should be twins, and they should have relationships, parent-child relationships, maybe with the whole car, or if I'm talking about a machine and a factory, and then all those complex machines and complex subsystems working together form an assembly line, and that should be a twin for the whole assembly line and how that all works together, and then going on and on up to the whole factory. And how do you make an entire factory alive? How do I do a lot of these cool industry 4.0 things that folks want to do? What if I need to share an assembly line with another company, you know, when it's idle, things like that, that whole systems, right, systems thing. Lots of ways to go with digital twins for sure.
That's great. So your 2 seconds is like your IoT minute, which is not a minute.
I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. So number four.
Yes. I promise this will be 1 second. A lot of people started to say that cloud was a fundamental component of IoT. People just make stuff up and say it, and then enough people say it, they believe it. Cloud's just another thing. If you got outdoor things roaming around that are not in a building or something, and they can talk straight to the cloud, that's great. If you're in a hospital, they're not interested in having all their medical stuff talking to some cloud directly. That's kind of the takeaway. Make sure that someone doesn't tell you the only way to do IoT is XYZ way. If that doesn't fit with you, make sure it works with your business and you don't put yourself in a bad situation.
The one thing I like to say there is make sure your architecture fits your application.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's so critical, because otherwise, you know, just exactly what you said, you end up, you know, either spending more money on hardware or more money on communications than you need to.
if I had a tagline for me, it's don't overthink it. Just connect your stuff.
Is that a personal thing, or is this a recommendation to the audience?
This is a recommendation for the audience around IoT. Okay. Don't overthink it. But I find myself saying that to people so often. It goes back to saying, I don't have to have all this other stuff, all this AI stuff, to get value from IoT. Get busy today. Connect your things. Retrofit your things. Even if you don't know how to capture the data yet, even if you don't have an IoT platform from somebody, as it were, don't let that slow you down. Start getting your things connected. Bumble, stumble, kind of like Forrest might do, right? Because there's value in remotely knowing, you know?
Right.
We have no shortage of people who walk around refineries and plants and stuff with clipboards taking logs by looking at gauges. If you can not have to do that just by remotely knowing the value of a gauge somewhere, and it through the magic of wireless, you can have that data come back. There's no analytics yet, but gosh, you just got instant value there. There are so many use cases that sound just like that in so many industries that there's instant value. So people don't think that you have to have the stuff. And like Dean said, make sure that outcome is in mind when you get started. Yeah, get after it.
Rob summarized it very well. I think that time in the submarine gave him lots of time to think. I do like the fact that Forrest Gump is now a poster child for IoT applications and getting things installed and doing it properly. You know, stumbling, bumbling around as you connect things.
That's amazing.
I think Rob's right on point with things, especially with the don't overthink. The example he used is exactly what's going on in many buildings today, where you're going around with a clipboard, you know, measuring what that needle is doing on that steam generator that you've got that's then creating the heat for your system. Or you're walking out and saying, okay, is my cooler at the right temperature and is the water flow right? Just think what your facilities team could be doing if that was all automated, coming into a computer and then pinging them via a mobile device if something was wrong that they had to go check.
Yeah, no AI required there.
No. Rob, thank you. And Dean, thank you for a great discussion. And I wanted to close here. If you are not already following Rob, you should. Like I said, he is the IoT Buddha. He's a wealth of knowledge and experience on IoT and many other digital topics. I mean, it's not just IoT. If you follow him, you're going to learn that this guy is a fantastic resource. And Rob has a blog, Digital Strategy and Insight blog, and it is at http://robtiffany.com. He also has a YouTube and podcast channel entitled The IoT Minute. And I will guarantee you one thing, it's not a minute. It's usually, what, Rob, 15 to 20 minutes, but it's absolutely fantastic stuff. And he regularly publishes and posts his insights through his YouTube channel as well as podcast. And you should follow on LinkedIn as well. And he's always posting his thoughts as well as insights that he's deriving from the world tour that he's always on, attending IoT conferences and the like. Make sure you follow him.
Thank you.
And yeah, you're more than welcome. Yeah. And if you would like to find out more about NextCurve's point of view on this and other digital topics of the day, go to our website. It's www.next-curve.com. And you'll find research notes, media, and replays of this and other webinars on our site. We will be posting replays of this session. We are also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and friend us on Twitter to get live feeds and coverage of industry conferences that we're attending and special NextCurve events such as this. And if you'd like to contact me, you can do so by email or phone for a scoping discussion to figure out how NextCurve can be part of your IoT journey. And you can contact Rob Tiffany. His information is here. If you're interested in figuring out what is Rob up to, and what are some of the fantastic things that he's doing with Hitachi and helping clients with their IoT journey. And to wrap up, I wanted to thank everyone for attending. And once again, thank you, Rob, for joining us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. And Dean, thank you always for your great insights and participating with us on this session. Let's do it again soon.
That sounds great.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
Visit us at www.next-curve.com.